This podcast brought to you by the English Department at Florida State University.
Because I'm introducing Paige M. Blair tonight, she gave me a packet of poems, actually her full thesis manuscript in progress. Poets are always changing their titles, especially manuscript titles, but I hope Paige's book is still called There is a Guidebook in the Hands of the World Around You. This title speaks to what I believe her book invites us to do, to discover one's path by looking outward. There is a Guidebook is structured as a series of observations in the tradition of some of Paige's favorite writers, first and second generation poets of the New York School. Perhaps not a coincidence, Paige studied at the Ashbery Homeschool this summer. Like we see in Ashbery, in Berrigan, in Notley, in Mayer, Paige's interrogation of the world often takes the form of conversations with others, with the surface of everyday experience, but also with the process of creation, the process of living. I'm not sure what poems Paige will choose to read from tonight, but one of the earlier poems in her manuscript is called For You, the Reader. In it, the speaker looks into the great silver bean, which if you've been to Chicago, you know is a sculpture called Cloud Gate that reflects the city's skyline and is usually surrounded by tourists with smartphones taking selfies. Welcome to my photo, Paige writes, to my pursuit of what the bean sees back. Both the world the bean sees and the author in the foreground are distorted, refracted. So this early poem is actually a poetic statement for the entire project. The world is something we both inherit and create, and in interpreting its shape, we interpret our position inside it. And this is why so many of the poems in There is a Guidebook follow the same title format as For You, the Reader, beginning with for and written to a person or an entity, reflecting or maybe refracting upon it. Paige has created a world for us populated by specific people, by the Australian man Robert, by Ponzi Bob, by Priscilla, and many others. But it's also full of conceptual addresses such as Those Who Know and The Penises I Will Never Meet. And about that poem, For the Penises I Will Never Meet, again, I'm not sure if Paige will read it tonight, but it's structured as a series of questions, asking an addressee to define himself, ending with, are you an unprofessional employee? Are you a plastic bag or an heirloom? Many of my favorite lines in Paige's manuscript ask us to examine our definitions of things. For instance, in the poem, For My Ladies, tell me, what is left to lollipop? What the men who call my generation see in their mowers, in their framed diplomas, in their delusional kayak trips down a preordained river. But this isn't to say that the book is all questions. There are also declaratives like this one in Today in the Park. The tax return will tell what the pregnancy test couldn't. I was born to lead a remarkable life. This is where I get to the uncomfortable part of tonight's introduction, which is that Paige M. Blair is expected to graduate from Florida State University with an MFA degree this fall. Most of the people who have gotten to know Paige over the past 2 years and change have done so with the understanding that she was a temporary gift to us, that Tallahassee was a stop for her somewhere between Lawrence, Kansas, where she got her undergraduate degree, Seoul, South Korea, where she taught kindergarten, and her hometown of Chicago, where Damien, her husband, lives. At Florida State, I have known Paige to be a generous reader, both of my poems in workshop and as assistant poetry editor for the Southeast Review. She served as fundraising chair for the Literary Journal's spring event in 2014, and this summer as a poet in residence for hands-on stanzas at the Poetry Center of Chicago. Paige M. Blair is the recipient of service awards from PEO International and the FSU Center for Social Change. She has poems published in the Coal City Review, Gingerbread House Literary Magazine, The Deadline Chicago, and other journals. I feel fortunate to know Paige as a friend, but also as a classmate and colleague. In our classes and in our conversations, Paige has demonstrated the kind of intellectual engagement with ideas and texts that led directly to the creation of the self-aware, whip-smart poems she is about to read. I'm pleased to introduce her to you tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Paige M. Blair.
Dang, Aaron. I didn't know it was possible to get a goosebumps from an introduction. Okay. Hi, everyone. So first I want to say thanks to... for making this reading series happen. People always say you should pretend your audience is naked, but that makes me more uncomfortable. So I'm going to pretend you're all well-behaved babies and that you're not going to remember any of this. And later I can say, like you say to a kid who went to Alaska as a baby, you've been to Alaska and thanks for coming to my reading. Thanks also to Aaron for agreeing to introduce me and reading my nascent manuscript. I appreciate Aaron as a colleague and as a friend and as a mentor because she's smart, articulate, and such a sharp reader, but I picked her to introduce me because I've often wondered what she thinks about me. Maybe you guys have too. I wonder what Aaron Hoover thinks about me. And even beyond that, I wonder what she thinks about my work. So thank you so much, Aaron, for telling me, and I'm really glad that I know you. Okay. So as Aaron mentioned, this is so uncomfortable. What is better? I don't know. As Maren mentioned, I'm very influenced by the New York School, so I want to start by reading this letter to John Ashbery that I wrote in August. He was supposed to read at the homeschool and then decided not to. I'm sorry, you guys, I just have to make this better. So low. Hello, can you guys? It's good? Okay. So anyways, Ashbery was supposed to come and read at the homeschool, but he's 88 and he is getting very old and got sick. So they said that he wasn't going to come. They kind of announced it like, you know, John's not feeling well. He's not coming. And I lost it. I got like incredibly weepy and it was ugly. And they had, they read two poems in his place. And the next morning I saw Roger Polito, who is the president of the Poetry Foundation. And he was going to see John, so I typewrote a letter for John Ashbery, and I'm going to read you that. And the poem that I sent with him, because I just wanted, if I wasn't going to meet him, to at least him have read something that I wrote, or to like hold something that I wrote to him. So, dear Mr. Ashbery, first I need to tell you that I love you. Not that I know you, the you that is a person, but the you I've met on the page. I love that mind and the alphabet which it contains very much. While I'd love to see, to meet, the person you are, I want you to know there are planets you have sent me and I have been to Guadalajara. I want to tell you we kept a train under a Christmas tree when I was little that had a tiny horn. Thank you for living like a great big coloring book and teaching me how many shades of interesting the body can be. With loud warmth, Paige M. Blair. So I just wanted to start that off. Him. So Roger Polito delivered my letter, and then he ended up coming that night. And I don't know if it was because of my letter, but I think it might have had something to do with it. So as Aaron mentioned, this summer I did a series of typewriter poems, Poems on Demand. I'll be doing them this coming first Friday. And it was sort of a way to connect with strangers. It was sort of like forced poetry material. And it was also kind of a self-challenge to see if I could come up with a poem on the spot. That's the majority of my manuscript, as Aaron mentioned. So I'm going to read a few from there. And the first one's called For Everyone in the Lobby. Gary said, read some Chicago poems. I was like, they're all Chicago poems, man. All of them. Okay, For Everyone in the Lobby. Making lunchtime noises, drowning the big and small waves of my pecking. We are walking down a sidewalk. There are a few windows open. You can tell who is typing, only me. But today at lunch, there are enough discussion-free words like croissants with brie should be, like an empty house with the computer printer broken on the living room floor. Get louder, lobby, so I can hear only me. I will not shush you because I am listening, because I am asking you to rear up like the 1997 heat wave, to list on one side like the 1915 Eastland disaster, like the candle and the bucket of milk that couldn't stop the skitty from screaming, the blaze that only listened to itself. The next one's called For Hannah, and this one was actually written in Tallahassee. For Hannah, and we workshopped this last week, and thank you to my colleagues and Dr. Kirby, who gave me some good suggestions on this one. For Hannah, palindrome names achieve a special sense of travel. passing through an elevator playing classic rock because these are songs that never air out like gun blasts used for Cupid bows, because back then there wasn't a motive for murder, only arrows aimed at the hearts of lovers, moms and dads, and forward and backward, handles that drive past potholes and guide sleeping hands into an ultraviolet rest stop outside of Tallahassee, which nearly travels but isn't quite symmetrical enough to off the chronological serenade. Hannah, tell me what it's like to have a face on two sides of a circle. Tell my mom, go back, and dad, 30 years. And tell the red light to be green. Tell the brakes to malfunction, but don't hurt them. Tell the drivers to keep driving. Tell her to change the radio dial. Tell him about the mustard on his pants. Anything to distract them from the car idling in the next lane. Close the diner early. Go back further. Tell the Cosmos, not this time. No, no, not these two. The next one I want to read is called For Laura Lee. So she came and chatted with me. Usually the way it went is I set up at a table in the Cultural Center of Chicago in the lobby with my old typewriter, which was just a really great way to get people to want to talk to me. And I'm like, I haven't seen one of those in a year. That's older than you are. And all kinds of other, where do you even buy a ribbon for that? You know, like all kinds of stuff that, just to chat. That got kind of annoying actually after a while, but like, yeah, it's old. I know. Made in Czechoslovakia. Not even a country anymore. So for Laura Lee, deceptively blissful. The ruptured eardrum. As I am talking to you, I cannot hear myself like I'm underwater, or like the lobby ceiling keeps the sound in the air. Writing blends to breathing, the listening kind of breath. Today is easier, but the left side logs my noise. The right side wanders quiet until a stab in the calmless sea of healing. I thaw from a numb jump into the pool. Into shoes that fit in my mind, but not on my foot. Let's see. For Rose Farina. So this was like a really, really fabulous old woman who talked to me for, I was there usually from 12:30 to 1:30, and she kept me almost till 2, just like telling me any, just, I was like, are you making this up? But she had a lot to say, so I tried to get it in. So for Rose Farina, dressed for December on July 8th, wearing a version of mink, black gloves, a tan hat with a gold brooch, black and gold earrings like an auditorium for pink lipstick. In 7 months, she turns 85, and last month, she went from a grandma to a million ma. She calls me a cute little woodpecker, the rare and colorful female, because when her husband appeared at their blueberry farm in a crisp white suit, she said, who are you, the good humor man? Because it's men who wear the plumage, and not, she tells me, if in four walls or however many rooms you can afford, you keep money in your own married name. Trick the furniture to think it's new. Don't bother with the juice racket, the modern-day credit card company that won't break your legs but will ruin your trace, even if you promise me, Paige. I live in the real world, and this July isn't like any other, and we should be concerned. I always look fabulous, but I see a lot of unmade beds. I worked for 7 mayors and back when the farmers toiled in denim. You're a baby doll, 29. Did you write that down? Make sure you spell my name wrong. One thing that was different about living in Chicago is just the daily commute. I think I found it really stimulating to be on the train for half an hour, just watching people. That's something we don't get when we drive around in our cars here. So this one's for the man whose bedroom is the bus bench, whose living room is the subway steps, littered with pigeon shit, whose neck extends the seat, and whose dreams peep sidewalks, sideways, horizontally lapsed pant legs, clicking shoes, and umbrella bags, whose alarm rings every 4 to 9 minutes overhead, who invisibly affects the up and down of passengers, and whose dead branch drags the black summer berries across the path of those who cross the street, who look away, who see a ghost and not a person living under the highway. For him, I do nothing except this. Okay. For Geneva, Her aunt with the changing G name and the scramble for scorpions on the outskirts of an Oakland desert in a savage bath from Meemaw paws, stirred like spit into a drink with British straws. Bartend the family tool chest, serve Butch and Harvard coattails, turn Karen into Tony and Tia Ted into president of our campground. He can wake us in an operatic sunrise. He can woo the little lamb into his family comedy. Tell me jokes about a boat to Poland. Crack one none of my four moms will understand because it is too late at night and right now Gusula goes by Gertrude. Make a list of Parisian stocks. Share your economy with the doubt of withdrawn cabinets. The shelf inside a soup drawer. The murky first meal, a dark Chicago pizza and a brightly sprinkled donut. Will it be what brings you to us? Or like Berlin and Israel, the mystery, or your family dreams away farther than on a boat back to Poland? Or like me, away from and then directly towards this table? I'll skip that one. So for me, sometimes nobody wanted a poem from me, so I would just sit there and write them for myself. I think the next few are instances of that, this penis one that Aaron mentioned. For me, because you can't photograph something that isn't there, even with a printout face, color ink, a well-shaded drawing. If there is love, it appears in a filter, near the pupil, above the mouth. If there is a future, it lays out in the sun like a careless criminal wanting to be caught. Okay. For the penises, I will never know. So I got married. You know, you got a lot to think about when you're like, that's it for me. That's it, you know? Do you guys just cheers to that? That's awesome. Woo! I actually looked up what the plural of penis was. Penises. You can either say peni. Or penises, but I liked penises better. What do you guys think?
Penises.
Penises? Yeah. For the penises, I will never know. Are you a plastic spoon in an almost empty jar of peanut butter? Are you a line I've written before? Are you a line that I forgot or should have never written? Are you a line of snow piled up in the janitor closet or a shirt I gave away but still occasionally want to wear? Are you a ring tan or the white part of skin that hasn't ever seen the sun? Are you a traveler's backpack in the underside of a bus? Must I watch you from the window, making sure you're not snatched away? Are you a thief? Are you a banker? Are you a spiritual leader? Can you do a headstand in a canoe stuck in an eddy on the fastest part of a river? Are you an unprofessional employee? Are you a plastic bag or an heirloom? I feel like that could go on forever, you know, to be continued. So when Keith sent out the roster of when I would be reading, I was like, ah, oh, that's so soon. And then I was like, I want to read these and I want to write one for you guys that are here tonight. So I started drafting it and it's long and it's weird and I don't really know if it's done, but I'm going to read it anyways because it's now happening for you in the audience. That's what it's called. You in your seats at your table. Look at the small candle burning. We call that a tea light. Some call it a lily pad. Some refer to it as a torch or magic. Look at the string behind me draped over the banister. We call those Christmas or icicle. But what do we call the plants growing in the front of a schoolyard with bars? Recess. That it bracks up to the teacher's lot. Coffee break. That fans spin on both sides of the U-shaped building, a storm of conditioned air, softer, less tangled, more voluminous, the loud and strangled breath of Lawndale, where two young men wear entirely purple outfits and I have a purple cup. Listeners, this is a letter I write to you from inside a car with new tires, you sitting there in my future September from my July. This arrives for you like a red note in my wedding underwear, and suddenly I know why everything Damien said this week was wrong and why my scale reads 140 instead of 138, but not why, when the students move from classroom to classroom, there is a sense of danger in the adult's tone, or why the desks are stacked up outside the classroom. The hive working on honeycomb, noises we hear in the stairwell, the smell the neighbors burning, classical music and marijuana, a modern pairing of legalese language bequeathed to us by our inheritors. You are the executor of this trust, the staircase of more than 3 but less than 95 levels. What is 20% of 5 million? It's 1 million. The dogs that enjoy to be petted not only in happy spirit but also in excitement. For you in the audience, I remove the cylinder inside a speaker, the brake pad between you and what enters your ears, the late night summer camp gossip, and brushing your teeth and talking, sound spraying onto a mirror, opening songs into a rerun of calisthenics, a sunscreen between choice of want and heated theater, a truck stop with showers and live girls. I am the rowboat little boy, tank top, backward teal hat. I'm invisible on the telephone, and I still use my mom's number at Walgreens and Petco. Because summer love involves letting you keep your phone and your wallet in my tote, but trust is not asking if I still have them. Because marshmallows. Because a swim-up bar is a good idea unless it leads to a wave pool and an unstable raft and a not very good swimmer. To hair waving quickly above ground and slowly underwater. When the breath decides it will not report, the line drives your eye into the center where the blue meets the green. I'm investigating the nature of the universe, but I've been in too many Michigan bathrooms today. The low-flowing plane and the bridge they knocked down over the weekend, the one that diverted us to an off-ramp. Today I am asleep in front of Marshall Fields with a towel over my eyes. I have a very swollen calf. I am on a bridge over the highway, sleeping on the small slotted box of shade on the overpass sidewalk. Dear audience, do you want this to be a play of personality, or can it be a clumsy pull of a stocking? I don't choke myself naturally like I know Harley can in the dark spotlight of musical crescendo, the silhouette of a sheer rope tugging at her neckline. But I did have a chocolate lab named Bosco who ate crayons and stockings and pooped them out like colorful sculptures. I can be your long-legged Kelly, your side Poeny Amana, Nicole, Tiffany, Brenda. Watch me twirl the cord around my pointer finger like a sharp shovel. Fill the baby pool, add sprinkles, make a donut. I want to overhear more people making love in their 50s-themed kitchen, because what Detroit taught me is that homes are better lived in, and the subway door shutting means one person has to go one station forward, then one station back, or that one person stays still for 2 stops, meaning no matter what they mouth to each other through the glass, they are, like we are, dear audience, still underground and separate. That's for you guys. Thanks. It's like when you give a gift to somebody, I'm like, they'll definitely have to clap for that one. I mean, I wrote it for them, you know? This is kind of a crutch, too. I don't. Maybe it's bothering you guys that I'm just hanging on to it, but it kind of feels good to me, you know, like just something to hang on to. So this is a poem in 3 parts that isn't finished either, because I imagine I will add a section every time the instance that this poem talks about happens again, which you'll understand more soon. So it's called Testing the Sharpies and Waiting for the Wash to Dry. 1. I saw Geoff at the Dunkin' Donuts today, and he was like, "Hey, baby," and I said, "I am not a baby." Don't you hate that? Don't you hate that baby you become when someone yells out their car window, "Hey, baby!" when clearly you're not a baby because babies can't walk their own dog and babies aren't allowed near the street? But when your lover calls you one, or like mine does, baby butt, or like I call him baby bobcat or baby badger, now that's different. I like the double baby. 2. Today a man underneath a highway sitting on a crate said to me and the young woman walking in stride, "Have a good day, you beautiful babies." And I said, "We're not babies. We're solar babies. Ever heard of us or George Washington's 6-ton plastic scrotum? And when we come around, there becomes a helicopter outside. We're here to take away your half-read newspapers." 3. It's a washing machine, the bar next door, the air conditioner, or a helicopter going by. All right, two more, you guys. Hang in there. This next one is for Barbara Hamby, my beloved major professor, who we just had a great manuscript meeting on Friday, and she gave me some good suggestions. So this is kind of a response to some of Barbara's, like, Paige, you really need to punctuate your poems. Like, it makes it difficult for me to read them, and it's unnecessary. I shouldn't have to work this hard. She's like, I'll work this hard, but none of your readers will. So thanks, Barbara. This one's for you. For Barbara. Barbara tells me I can't hide behind my eyeless abstractions anymore or never. I am an eye. I'll admit it. But I have two of them, so it seems insincere to use only one letter. How can one stripe with a floor and a roof keep anything dry? If the roof was dripping, I could probably fix it, but it might not be enchanting. I also struggle with grammar, and by that I mean punctuation. It's like no one ever taught me, like I'm three clicks away from a comma. I can't decide if I'm elusive because I'm being coy or because I think they're metaphors that just aren't working. Yesterday I told my students to turn their smiles upside down, and then explained emotional dyslexia. Maybe I could try to show you how to read me. Do you have a minute? Because this might require a many minute caesura. Pretty sure Laura Miner gave me the bird that one. I was like, is she flicking me off? Okay. So this is my last semester at FSU, which is tragic, and I am incredibly grateful to this community for the support and the time that it gave me to grow, and for all of my colleagues for their, like, you know, encouragement, and this has been a really, really, really wonderful opportunity that I will forever be grateful for wherever I go. I want to read this one. I wrote it this morning in response to a New York Times headline that said Bruce Willis in bed, and I think it might be the start of a new series. Well, I mean, the series being, it's called One Time, because reading that headline triggered this memory about this one time, which I'll tell you about. But I think it'd be kind of fun to, you know, today in my class I was talking about this one time in ATM and China told me to, like, look around before I entered my PIN number. And I was like, what? Like, don't tell me what to do. You're an ATM, you know? So one time. One time I saw Bruce Willis at an outdoor mall in LA, and he has a really nice butt. I mean, he wears jeans like a model, like an actor representing America in a soccer match. Elsewhere, they'd say, that football player has a butt like a mannequin, like a cowboy, like two pockets in the back of our heart, where we want to stuff our hands. I certainly did. I mean, I wanted to see his face too, but he was looking inside the front window of the Levi store, thinking about his next pair of jeans, or the nice LA weather, or how nice it is to shop under the sky, or how nice it is to have such a nice fanny. Or maybe he saw me staring in the reflection of the window and thought, is that girl looking at my butt? No, she's too young for that. Or is that girl with her dad and her sister, or her dad and her dad's girlfriend? Or maybe he thought, wow, that girl has really, really nice hair. thank you guys so much for listening.